Hi and welcome to the Blended Science Podcast. Thank you so much for stopping by. We appreciate you listening to our episodes and giving us the feedback that is needed. In the previous episode, I introduced anxiety and stress, and it's been overwhelming the feedback we've been getting, and it basically shows how we need to be talking more about mental health. In the previous episode, I made a promise that I'll bring in a counselor, which we had arranged a long time ago, but it couldn't materialize, and I've had to improvise. So as a result, I am talking about imposter syndrome. Now, imposterism is basically a condition. It's not necessarily a mental disorder. You know, it's not a pathological disorder. At least I haven't come across any pathophysiology of the imposter syndrome. However, it's actually a condition whereby individuals living with imposterism feel like they are not as good as people think they are. You know, they feel like they're a fraud. They feel like they may be exposed. So they're always living in fear that one day someone will discover that, dear me, I am not as good of a employee or as a researcher or, you know, as an accountant as people think I am. And those feelings always stem from a very deep root, which we're going to unpack in this episode. Now, this phenomenon was discovered in 1978 by Dr. Pauline Clance and her colleague Suzanne. They noticed that their female students were full of doubt about their abilities, and they were also worried about their success. So what they then did was to do a survey on 150 women, which were high achievers. You know, they had gotten all kinds of scholarships, all kinds of prizes. And what was interesting is that despite their high achievement, they still could not internalize their success. So they could not own their success, you know, and they'll attribute it to luck, you know, being at the right place at the right time, or just favoritism, you know, or maybe they'll even go to an extent as to say there must be a mistake, you know, and which then resulted in these researchers naming it an imposter phenomenon and later an imposter syndrome. So as I was preparing for this episode, I went onto Twitter and I searched imposter syndrome. And what I was interested in really was to see how many people have searched for imposter syndrome in the last 30 minutes. And guess what? The result varied between 28 and 32. And I did these searches at different times, and just to see, you know, the accuracy of these results. And it was quite interesting, which basically means that almost every minute a person on Twitter is tweeting about imposter syndrome, you know, and a lot of people are discovering about it. And research actually suggests that at least 70% of adults, they've experienced some form of imposterism once in their lives. And more interestingly, 25 to 30% of high achievers currently suffer with imposterism. And this is actually characterized by, number one, pushing for perfection, not accepting compliments from colleagues and friends. You know, we normally have good friends who would say, wow, friend, you're doing well in this area and that area. But your critical voice says, well, you are not in my field, so we probably shouldn't be giving me compliments. If you're in my field, you would know that I'm not doing that well, you know, which is a bit harsh, you know. And imposterism almost seems like that mean friend of yours who always, you know, when you're growing up, that person was always teasing you or bullying you, whatever the case may be, but they're always on your case. And that's that inner voice in you that is overly critical and wants to reject anything that is a compliment, right? And this may also be followed by, you know, working harder than everyone so that they do not realize that you're actually a fraud. So internally, you're trying to prove that you are worth being where you are, right? This is also often followed by a paralyzing fear of failure, you know, and procrastination, avoidance of certain tasks that you have been given or things that you need to do, just putting them off and numbing them with, you know, watching too much TV, drinking, partying, or doing anything that will make you avoid work. Now, this is often linked to our own belief systems. You know, when I talk about belief systems, I'm referring to what we believe about ourselves. And this is often framed or embedded from how we were raised, you know. Now, let me make an example with two kids that come from a good family, you know. The older kid, her name is Sanitizer, and the younger one is Vaccine. Sanitizer is a natural genius. She's a high achiever. She's doing well at school. She is praised for doing well, you know, by her teachers. But when she comes back home, she doesn't really get that much praise. You know, if she gets 95%, her father would then ask her what happened to the 5%. On the other hand, Vaccine isn't really a natural genius. She has to work hard to achieve, you know, her pass marks. So what ends up happening is that in an effort to encourage Vaccine, she will be more celebrated for what, you know, she has achieved. On the other hand, Sanitizer has been doing well all the time, but she doesn't get, you know, the praises, because the logic is the one who needs more encouragement should be celebrated more. Unfortunately, Sanitizer grows up with this mentality that they need to do well, they need to pass well, and they need not to celebrate their achievement so that they are always grounded. Now, what ends up happening is that Sanitizer does well, you know, in school, does well in her undergrad degree, goes into postgrad, tastes a little bit of failure, but they're able to make it through, and then they get their first job. And they all of a sudden have to work with teams. You know, they have to work with a team. She has to lead a team. And her first project, unfortunately, fails. And this is what her fears are always made of. The fear of failure. And what actually starts happening is that the performance of Sanitizer goes down. Particularly because, number one, she hasn't failed that much. She doesn't have a good relationship with failure. And because she has always believed that she must do everything by herself, she struggles to trust anyone with her work. But what works for her currently is actually going into her mirror and talking down on herself and saying, "How could you fail at this? You know how you're such a genius and you've always been a genius. This thing should be very easy for you. You know, you got cum laude in your degree. You know, you can't be struggling with this." So what that actually happens is that this is negative reinforcement, and this then drives work, you know, and it's either they're going to work hard or they're just going to avoid the work that is at hand, and the avoidance will then lead to procrastination, or overworking would lead to success, and that success will be discounted and not celebrated as such. Now, this then leads to thoughts such as, "I don't really know what I'm doing," and a lot of discomfort, which creates anxieties, and eventually a person starts feeling like an imposter because they are not aware of how they've gotten to where they are. And all of a sudden they start thinking, "How did I make it through if I cannot do 1, 2, 3, and 4? One can break this cycle by simply asking for help or communicating ahead of time if the deadlines are not realistic, or actually have a more positive attitude towards, you know, work. And if everyone fails, it doesn't mean that it's the end of the world, you know. Instead of talking negatively about yourself, rather talk positively about yourself and use that as a learning opportunity. We learn a lot more when we fail than when we are just cruising through. So failures are just part of life. Everyone fails at a certain point in life. Now, I know not everyone is a natural genius. If we have a look at a vaccine, for example, vaccine has always been celebrated. She has always struggled with school. So what actually happened is that vaccine was shouted at school and was always compared to her sister sanitizer. You know, the teachers would be like, look at sanitizer, she's doing so well. What the hell is wrong with you, vaccine? You know, you come from such a good family, you have all the resources. You know, you are so dumb. And vaccine will have a little bit of an attitude, and then the teacher will be like, you will never amount to anything in life. You know, and such words are so critical, you know, for a person who's still growing, because, you know, their brain absorbs all these things and they remember all these things. Now, growing up, she has actually built a lot of theories about herself. And these theories have led to self-doubt, feeling like she's not worthy of the success she's actually attained, you know, regardless of the fact that she was a struggler and she actually worked hard. You know, but because she has often been compared to her sister, and she finds herself comparing herself to her peers, which makes things a little bit worse, primarily because she is not working, she's still looking for a job, and she finds, you know, she gets a lot of rejection letters and has actually started her own business at home. She asks herself, you know, what exactly am I doing here? Because clearly the words of my teachers were true and I'm not going to amount to anything. Now, with this fiction story I'm telling you, I'm just wanting to give you some sense of what the realities that we are faced with, the different forms of imposterism and the different forms of self-doubt that the youth is currently faced with. And I strongly believe that social media isn't helping in any way. Young person, if you can quit social media, please do. It's not going to add any value in your life. All it does is just steal your time and create unnecessary anxieties. Anyway, I want to highlight this. You know, there's something about putting a name on something that you have been struggling with, you know, and understanding how it works. And I know sometimes logic doesn't necessarily help us break free from things, you know, just because one knows about the physiology of the body doesn't necessarily make them an excellent athlete. But this is a good start, right? Understanding what this thing is, understanding the terminology, you know, and understanding how many people are actually dealing with it is actually gonna be a very good start, okay? And I'd like to leave you with a couple of things which I've learned from a book written by Dr. Jessamy Hibbert. I'll leave the details on the book in the show notes. She actually argues that feelings are not a fact, which actually makes a lot of sense. You know, just because you feel like you cannot do it doesn't mean that you cannot do it, you know? And I'm sure there are certain instances where one had felt like they were not capable of doing a particular task, but eventually they were able to come out victorious on the other end, which actually disapproves this whole internal beliefs that one is an imposter. The second thing is redefining what success means to you. Thirdly, one needs to reframe beliefs about themselves. This is important because we have spent a lot of our time doing what is called confirmation bias, basically looking for every evidence that points towards the fact that one is a fraud. You know, you've been building up this evidence. Now it's time to dismantle that evidence. This can be done by writing down all your successes, you know, counting all your blessings, you know, getting a sheet of paper or getting that journal, write down every little bit of successful things you have done. And this will obviously be within your context. And the temptation here when you start writing these things is to start comparing yourself to someone. At this particular moment, we are trying to break away from any form of comparison. We want to start comparing ourselves with ourselves, right? So happy writing that. And this is going to be a list that you're going to be looking into every once in a while. Additionally, making it a habit that one is writing down all these victories, you know, on a weekly basis. You know, have time, if you have a family, sit down at dinner table and be thankful that 1, 2, 3, and 4 we're able to do successfully. And this actually now starts to tell your mind, it tells your brain, what, you know what, because you can see there's evidence that you're actually doing something positive in your life, right? And I hope that will be a great start as well. The fourth and the last thing that I've picked up from this book is being honest about what you know and what you do not know. Practice saying, I don't know. Let me come back to you on that. I remember when I was still a PhD student, I got an opportunity to go and present at an international conference. But you know, in these international conferences, you usually go and present a poster. But there was this one professor who was invited as a keynote speaker. And, you know, he spoke about his brilliant work and, you know, all the stuff he was doing. And then there were questions coming from the floor. And when this person asked this question, that the presenter and the professor was presenting responded by saying, I don't know. And which actually meant that he was well aware of his work. He knew where his research limitations were, and he didn't want to expand on something he hasn't done, which is something we can all learn from, whether in the academic field or not. You know, just be honest and say, I don't know. Because at the core of the imposter syndrome is the fear of losing one's reputation. So if you're going to start answering things you're unsure about, you're then going to perpetuate the imposterism, right? Instead of answering something one doesn't know, rather look things up, you know, ask for assistance, go to workshops, build skills, you know, attend training courses and conferences as well. And lastly, treat yourself with compassion and be very patient with yourself. All right. To end off this episode, I want to leave you with the top 5 regrets of the dying. This is from a book written by Bronnie Ware. The first one says, I wish I had the courage to live a true life to myself, not the life that others expected of me. Number 2, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Number 3, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. Number 4, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. Lastly, I wish I had let myself be happier. And I'm going to add the last one, I wish I had prayed more when I was still young. With those words, I hope you enjoy this day. In South Africa, we are celebrating Youth Day, which means we are on holiday. And I definitely hope that we all get a restful day, spend time with family, spend time with real friends, you know, physical friends, not virtual friends, and have real conversations which are edifying. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, you are not an imposter. Have a great day. I am signing out. Bye.